everything you know will change.
Like to have everybody's attention for a moment.
You the man.
What's that mean? You the man.
And now, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, now all of a sudden you're stepping up to the next level of competition.
All right, listen up.
Welcome to The Rundown. Here's Desmond Johnson.
It is Saturday, Sports Hub fans, and you know what that means. Welcome to The Rundown. Lots to recap and look forward to. Is Duke in trouble? Can UNC get a one seed? Will NC State even get into the big dance? We'll go around the ACC. Loaded Saturday slate for ACC hoops today. We'll get you the times and get you ready for all of those matchups. Patriots owner Robert Kraft out here allegedly buying prostitutes. We didn't get a chance to talk about this last week, so we're going to touch on it this week. Also, Cowboys tight end Jason Witten ending his retirement and will return to the Cowboys next year. We've got a Cowboy fan in the house and Mr. Rod Funderburk. We're going to get his opinion on what that means for his Cowboys. The Panthers head coach Ron Rivera had some interesting comments on Greg Olsen and Cam Newton this week. We'll get into NFL news. Is our boy LeBron James going to miss the NBA playoffs for the first time since 2005? Doesn't really look very good for the Lakers right now. Plus, we'll check in on our Hornets' pursuit of a playoff berth and more. And exclusively, we've got an interview with North Carolina A&T men's basketball head coach Jay Joyner as the Aggies attempt to win the MEAC. This is The Rundown. I am your host, Desmond Johnson. I am joined by Rod Funderburk, Sports Carolina Monthly contributor Mark Zanetto in the house, Sawyer Dillon, our producer extraordinaire, and intern Aaron. Johnny O is actually, I think, at the Joel right now, getting ready for Syracuse and Wake Forest. He was wanting to call in the second hour. We'll see if we can squeeze that in. He might be a little sauced up by the time we get to him, though. So we'll find out what's up with Johnny O out in Winston-Salem getting ready to see his Syracuse Orange. The question for the day on Twitter: who would you like to see take Jason Witten's spot on Monday Night Football? Booger McFarlane, Peyton Manning, or the Panthers tight end Greg Olsen, who was all over media as the Panthers season ended abruptly? You can go to Twitter to Sports Hub Triad, at Sports Hub Triad, excuse me, and give your answer there. Or you can call in and tell us over the lines. 336-777-1600 is the number to dial if you want to chime in on any of the topics that we're going to tackle this morning. First up, though, ACC basketball. And before we get into that, if you want to see the Carolina Thunderbirds at the Annex this season for only $5, you probably need to hurry. We only have 10 or 11 of these tickets left. They are good for the playoffs as well, and the Thunderbirds will definitely be in that. Check out the Sports Carolina Monthly Thunderbird deal. Go to sportscarolinamonthly.com. Click on the Thunderbirds ticket special at the top of the homepage. Get those vouchers and enjoy hockey action in the Triad. Single game tickets only $5, exclusively from sportscarolinamonthly.com, and go Thunderbirds. So, fellas, Duke suffered a loss to Virginia Tech on Tuesday without Zion. I've not seen anything showing that he will play today. I don't know if you guys have heard anything about this yet or not.
I don't think he's available today, right?
I know they said maybe Saturday when it first happened. They were kind of targeting today, but I mean, Duke's been saying day to day since it happened, so it could be today, it could be next week, it could be never. Like, I mean, we really don't know when he's going to come back. My question, though, to start off the show: where does that leave Duke? Are they a top five team without him? I'm inclined to say no. From watching them without Zion, they seem kind of lost.
Yeah, I think Duke itself, they're top five, probably no. I think top 15 program in the country without Zion, I think, is where they would end up. And mostly because you're seeing it with, you know, they beat Syracuse and they lose to Virginia Tech. Like, those are that's kind of like what the ACC is right now. When you have teams outside the top two, you know, Virginia, North Carolina, they're kind of splitting games with different teams. If Duke's at full strength, they don't lose those games, I don't believe. But with them not being at full strength, you know, it's tough to see them as an elite program without the, you know, favorite for the National Player of the Year.
There's no way they can be a top five team. I mean, they don't have a middle presence without Zion. You know, this is a guy who, you know, controls the middle when he's in there. He's, what, six? Is he 6'7", somewhere in there? 6'8"?
Yeah, 6'7", 6'8", something
like 6'8",
that.
280 pounds. You dare not come into presence when he's on defense, and you are scared to death like the Louisville Cardinals were when they were playing toward the end of that game. I mean, so what do? They don't have a middle presence. And when you don't have a middle presence, no team is scared of you. Now, the good thing for Duke right now is they have a pretty lax schedule. Like tonight, they play Miami. To me, they don't need, you know, Zion for Miami. Miami's only 4-11 in ACC play.
They're feisty, though.
They are feisty. Now, that they are.
What's dude's name? Chris Little?
Chris Likes?
Chris Likes.
Yeah. But I think Trey Jones can give him a hard time. If they put him on him. I mean, Trey's one of the best ACC defenders that I have seen in a while. I mean, he causes you to alter your passes, which can get deflected. Next thing you know, it's headed the other way for a fast break.
I was thinking about this when I was watching the Duke-Virginia Tech game Tuesday night, waiting on the Carolina game to start at 9. Duke without Zion reminds me of the 1993-94 Chicago Bulls when Jordan retired the first time and went to play baseball. Mm-hmm. It left this core of like Pippen and Horace Grant, mm-hmm. and like they were still a good team, but they were missing like that it factor with Jordan in the roster. Like, mm-hmm. it's literally the exact same roster just without Jordan. It's sure. the same thing with Duke. It's the exact same roster that everybody was hyping at the beginning of the year that was as good as 1990 UNLV. Mm-hmm. You take Zion off of it, you're still left with R.J. Barrett and Cam Reddish and Trey Jones and Marquez Bolden and all these guys. Like, they have post presence with Javon Delaurier and Marquez Bolden, but they don't really run through the post. So Zion just kind of does his own thing. And that thought crossed my mind watching that Virginia Tech game, because Virginia Tech controlled it the whole time. And when it came down to it at the end, the Bulls just didn't have enough to get over better teams like the Knicks and whatnot until Jordan came back. And then mm-hmm. they became even bigger than what they were before. But that's what they reminded me of when I was watching them.
That's a great comparison. And that's exactly what they are. Now, you asked a question before. You know, is Zion going to come back at all? Now, me personally, I think he's going to come back.
Of course.
Just based upon, you know, some of the statements that he made before he came to Duke. You know, he could have gone anywhere to shine. I mean, he could have gone to Clemson and been a one-man wrecking crew. Granted, they probably wouldn't have gone very far, but
they'd be a top 25 team.
Yeah, well, ESPN would have still followed him. Oh, he'd still be number one guy heading into the draft.
Sure.
But he wanted to play a brand of ball that was unselfish, learn as much as he could from Coach K. And he even mentioned, hey, he said, I'm going to go and play with some guys who are great. At that time, he thought these guys may have even been better than him, because if I'm not mistaken, was it Zion like the fourth to sign?
He was like
Duke?
Two or
the
three.
Last one, yeah.
He was the last one.
In the summer, Everybody.
But he was also the second or third rated kid in coming out. Yeah, RJ was one.
RJ was number one.
But, I mean, you're talking about still having to share the ball.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Whereas he goes somewhere where he doesn't have to share the ball. And, you know, he could definitely be the man. He is the man now. Don't get me wrong.
Sure.
But, you know, that was his mindset. So I expect him to play again. I think they just want to make sure he's 100% before they bring him back. And I make this prediction. He doesn't come back until it's time to see the Dean Dome.
Maybe. I think that would be pretty cool. And, you know, ESPN would be thanking him for that, too, because they'd be hyping that all up.
He left out playing Carolina, and he's coming back.
That would be better than what Kyrie did. Kyrie ducked Carolina three times that year
and came back for the tournament
basically for himself and draft stock.
To kind of piggyback off of what Dez said, I think part of the mystique of Zion is not so much the, you know, he's such a freak, but, you know, kids are pretty conscious of like social media and like YouTube and all that stuff. Listen, without him, there's no fear of getting posterized. There's no fear of him getting just this ridiculous blocks that you only see in 2K. Like, you know, like he's just such a freak that, you know, there's no fear. It's to what Rod said about presence. Like, he brings a different presence. And I think he doesn't get enough credit for his defensive presence. I mean, he's a monster and he's efficient on offense. But when he's, you know, if they're pressing or if they're playing any type of pressure D and he's kind of playing that safety position where he picks off passes and goes the length of the floor for a dunk, that's psychologically, that's always in your head as an opposing player. It's like, all right, well, I gotta make the best pass here or else – you know, it's going the other way for, you know, it's kind of like playing with Deion Sanders. You don't want to throw it in his area because he's going to pick it off and go for a touchdown. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's my thing with Zion but he's coming back, man. This kid's a competitor. All the people saying that he, you know, he should shut it down, they've never played any sport at a high level. They don't understand the competitive nature of a kid.
Aaron. Yeah, I think I like what Rodney had to say about it, but I want to get back to what you said about your comparison with the 93-94 Bulls after Jordan left. Nah, man. Like, those kids aren't – Horace Grant and Scottie Pippen and those guys were established all-stars and superstars already. These kids, preseason they were ranked this and that. But throughout the season, aside from RJ Barrett and as of recently Cam Reddish, they haven't been, you know, as advertised. Like, Zion Williamson is that guy, yes, for Duke, but to say they're as good as they're like the 93-94.
No. I'm not saying they're as good
or not
as them.
Good. Yeah,
I'm comparing them to their
good,
situation.
No, they're not even.
I'm comparing them to their situation. They lost
right.
their star player.
Right.
The rosters are still relatively the same. And in theory, if you look at the rosters on paper, you would think, oh, well,
right.
this Bulls team with Scottie Pippen and Horace Grant, they got
Hall
just as good
coach.
Of a shot
right.
to get
Hall
to the finals.
Coach.
And I think
yeah.
that's what
without.
I'm saying. That's the on paper comparison. But in reality, and we have enough of a season to say in reality, that's not what they are. They're not what they were on paper, what we thought coming into the season. Cam Reddish was slow to get started. He's just now coming on. But RJ Barrett is as advertised. Everyone else, ho-hum. You know,
that's
not
what the Bulls were.
Yeah.
Everyone else was ho-hum on that team.
I mean, what are you talking about? The Bulls,
BJ Armstrong. These guys were role players.
They're missing the it was a fear factor.
Yeah, Zion is incredible. Yeah,
and
absolutely.
And so was Jordan for that team. That's what I'm saying. Like, I'm not saying that they are as good as the 93-94 Chicago Bulls.
It's not an apples to apples comparison.
Right. I'm saying that the similarities are there, where the Bulls had to figure out how to play without Michael Jordan, and with Michael Jordan, they were a totally different. Like, a lot of teams would lose to that team just as soon as they stepped on the court, just because Jordan was out there and that fear factor of losing to the Bulls. And that's what was happening with Duke earlier this year. There were some teams they played. I mean, they lost as soon as they walked out there because they see Zion out there and they see RJ Barrett and all these guys and all the hype, and they psyched themselves out of it. The Louisville game, perfect example. You're up by a billion points at home or whatever, and you still end up losing the game, and mainly because that fear of losing to those players. Now,
right.
if Zion wasn't out on that court that night, Louisville wins that game.
Right, I get that, and I get what you're saying about the comparison. I just think in that comparison, those players had done a lot more to establish themselves than what Duke's freshmen have done to establish themselves.
Well, you could say that about any NBA team comparing it to a college team. I don't think that's what Dez was in the intention. It was just to kind of point out the biggest star in
right.
all of NBA at that time to now the biggest star in all of college basketball.
Right.
That's the comparison.
Yeah. Well, here, let's move on to some of the rest of the ACC here. UNC, I didn't really realize this until the other night. Carolina has been ripping through pretty much everybody they have seen since they lost that Louisville game by 20 points over a month ago. They clearly are not the same team they were that day. They are a very deep team. Three or four or five guys can go double digits on you at any moment. Is Carolina legit Final Four team? They're ranked number five. They don't really control their destiny in the ACC. They have to win out, which means they would sweep Duke, and they have to hope Virginia drops one of these games either to Syracuse or to Louisville that they've got coming up. I don't think that's likely. It looks like Virginia's probably going to win the ACC. But can you see North Carolina getting to the Final Four with the roster they currently have?
Yes. I mean, in one word, 100%.
Well, yes and no, to be honest with you. There are a couple of things that you have to evaluate when you're looking at this North Carolina team, if they can be a top Final Four team or not. Number one, all right, I agree. You go to Duke, you beat Duke at Cameron with or without Zion, you have a chance to beat anybody, anywhere. So let's ask a couple of questions. Do you have a great coach?
Yes.
Okay, yes. You have a great coach in Roy Williams. So we can check that off the list. Do you have a blend of young talent and old talent?
Yes.
Yeah, we got that. We got Luke May. We got Cam Johnson. These guys, Luke May had 26 points Wednesday against Duke.
Yeah.
You know, Nasir Little, he's young. Kobe White, he's young. So let's check that off. All right, do we have a magnetic player that can do other things that other players can't do? Do we have that?
I think you do.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, name them, because I'm not seeing that.
Kobe
Help
White.
Me out with that.
Kobe White.
Well, and my issue,
athleticism.
My issue with Kobe White is he's not, like, he didn't give it to me in the Duke game,
but
which
let me
is
ask
when
you,
he
but,
needed to give it
but
to
let
me.
Let me ask you a question, because you're breaking it down in a way that, like, teams that have won national championships have been carried by guards, and he
there's
may,
been somebody yes
yeah I mean
yes.
so maybe to your point, maybe he's not that guy, but I can remember you know, the Kemba Walker led UConn team. Now it's a junior versus a freshman, but
right.
I mean, I don't think anybody would say Kobe White as a college player looks pretty damn good, like, you know what I mean, like Kemba-esque, dropping 30 on people, like, for a joke. I mean, he's got
a great three-point shot.
He has 33 33 points twice. That's what, third and fourth in Carolina freshman record. I think Hansborough and Barnes both had 40 mm-hmm. in the times that they were there. So think about that in the storied history of North Carolina. He's only one of three people that have done it. He did it twice.
Okay. So let's say Coby White is that guy, that magnetic player that we need, and he's going to keep playing the way he has been playing lately, dropping 33, whatever. I could see that happen. Now I can see, yes, not only are we a top four, but with that happening, we could win the national championship. Like you said, Coby White has been impressive lately. Sure. You know, the early stages of his collegiate career, he was a little up and down. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But he's went to the point that I believe he's getting ready to make that next jump to the next level, probably sooner than later, which is not what I want to see. Don't get me wrong. He's already being pegged as what, a first-round pick?
He's a lottery pick.
Somewhere around 16, 19.
Yeah, he's on the edge of the lottery right now. Yeah. We still got March to go. So real quick, let me run through some of these start times for these ACC games here before we take our first break. 12
what about
noon?
You, Des? Before you go, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but – do you think Carolina is a top four?
Top four, man. Please, come on. Man.
Okay, all right. I've been offended, Mark.
I've been hollering that. I've been hollering that since the beginning of the year, and nobody wanted to believe me.
I was just like,
everything you just laid out. That was my argument. All the stuff you want for a college team, they have experience. They have youth. They've got lottery picks. They've got a Hall of Fame coach. What is it that you need to convince yourself? Anyway,
and you just said Coby White was the magnetic player that we need, does things that others can't do.
You got somebody that can take over a game. Cam Johnson shooting 50% from three. I mean,
Cam is another one.
12 noon today, NC State taking on number 18 Florida State. Very big game. This is in Tallahassee. We were talking about NC State earlier before the show began. I think NC State needs to win this game to cement not just getting into the tournament, but getting a single digit seed, an 8, a 9.
They're projected as an 11 right now.
Yeah, that's almost maybe play in game type seed, you know? Okay. So they need this win, I think.
That's strength of schedule there, Rod. I'm telling you, that's why they're an 11.
Number 12 o'clock at the Joel. Our man Johnny O is out there right now. Syracuse taking on Wake Forest. Syracuse needs that game. They can't afford to drop that game to Wake. At 2 p.m. today, the second-ranked Virginia Cavaliers taking on Pittsburgh. That game is at Charlottesville. Don't have a lot of hopes about Virginia losing that game. But 4 p.m. this afternoon, actually, this is going to be my doubleheader today. At Cameron, number 3, Duke taking on Miami, a pesky Miami team. They gave Carolina some issues a couple weeks back, took them to overtime. And then at 6 o'clock, number 5, North Carolina traveling down to Little John to take on Clemson. Tomorrow, you got Notre Dame at Louisville at 1:30. And you got Boston College at Georgia Tech at 6 o'clock. Got Ed on the line. He wants to talk about North Carolina and their Final Four chances. What's going on, Ed? You're listening to The Rundown.
Yeah. I wanted to chime in here a little bit. I think right now Duke, without Zion Williamson and some of the injuries that they've had, in the last five games, they should have definitely lost that game at Louisville. And if it wasn't for the efficiency of the shooting of the two players that I think I talked to you about on Friday, where Barrett hit 75% of his shots, and O'Connell, I think, hit 77% of his shots. The rest of the team, I think, shot like 30. They could very well be 1-4 instead of 3-2 in the last five. As far as Carolina, I think it all depends upon the bracket and the teams within that bracket. They cannot face a team like Texas A&M, where you've got two big horses down low that can rebound and shoot. And I wanted to ask also Rod and Dez if they thought Carolina should be concerned today. I know they've had problems in the past with Clemson, and I'll take it off the air, please.
I mean, I think it's the time of the year where they need to be concerned with every game. Like, I don't think they should be looking ahead to anybody on the schedule. Clemson always gives them a fight. North Carolina has a pretty good, an excellent record against Clemson, if I'm not mistaken.
We're still undefeated at home. The issue is we're just not playing them at home.
They have not beaten Clemson. Clemson has not beaten North Carolina in Chapel Hill since the Civil War, if I'm not mistaken. So it's been a while.
I wouldn't worry about Clemson so much. You know, I know you guys have had a history with them, but
those are the times when we are like right there with the nail biters when we say we're not going to worry about this team. Am I right or wrong?
I recall saying that for Miami.
It's a conference game, so you're not gonna blow them out. But you're going to win the game. You're going to get that
W. Hope so.
Carolina, the past 3 weeks, maybe only Kentucky has played better than Carolina the past 3 weeks.
Yeah, so
nationally.
What I was going to say is I was looking at their schedule. The only way North Carolina doesn't get to a Final Four, in my opinion, is if they face a team not necessarily like Kentucky with the talent, but the style of play that they play. I think a lot of times you play in the NCAA tournament, whether they're a 1 or a 2, the 16 seed, the 10 or the 7 seed they play the next round. If you try to play Carolina's ball with them, you're going to lose. It's when you play if they play a senior-laden team that's an 8 seed or whatever that can control pace, that doesn't panic under pressure, then there's obviously going to be a dogfight. But that's to Ed's point. It depends on the bracket, right? You could they could face almost nobody that can hang with them until they get to the Elite Eight, and then we'll see what's going on. If Kentucky's a two seed, or if they play a Texas A&M, like he was saying, or a Michigan, then we'll see how good they are. But I think they could easily, just like anybody, can get upset if they play a team that you're not like a Wofford or somebody like that. That they played earlier in the year. Mm-hmm. That looks like a pretty good road win now, doesn't it? Now that they're ranked in the top 25. Yeah. So something like that could trip up Carolina. But outside of that, I don't know, man. They're playing good ball, just like Kentucky, just like Des said.
They are. And to answer Ed's question, Ed, this is your buddy Rod. Hey, man, I think we beat Clemson. I think we finish out the year, as a matter of fact, the ACC regular season, undefeated. I think we also beat Duke next Saturday with Zion Williamson in the lineup, Ed. And I also believe that Virginia will lose to Johnny O. Syracuse on Tuesday, which will give us the ACC win.
Should have seen Dez's face.
On that note, I'm going to take a quick break. Next, a little barbershop talk with all this one-and-done talk about freshmen. Right now, we're going to take a look at the best freshman college basketball players we've ever seen. You can chime in on this also. Let's fill up the phone lines, 336-777-1600, or hit us up at Sports Hub Triad on Twitter. Intern Aaron Manning, our social media this morning. Barbershop talk next on The Rundown.
What's up, dog?
Think about it.
A party?
Are we having a party?
Yeah!
Back to The Rundown with Desmond Johnson.
Barbershop Talk, brought to you by Haviland Express Lube of Kernersville. Their service facility is independently owned and operated by Mac Allen, providing full-service repair and maintenance services. They use the latest diagnostic equipment to guarantee your vehicle is repaired or serviced properly and in a timely fashion. Mac and his team pride themselves on commitment to the local community and providing value-driven service in an inviting and friendly environment. Go see Mac at Haviland Express Lube of Kernersville for all of your automotive maintenance needs.
You know what? Mac hooked me up this week, man. My fan blower in my car wasn't working. I took it over to Mac, and Mac got it straightened out for me, man.
That's
a nice plug.
You guys are locked into The Rundown. I'm your host, Desmond Johnson. Rod Funderburk, Mark Zanetto in the house, filling in for Johnny O, who is sitting in the parking lot at the Joel getting ready to see his Syracuse Orange take on the Wake Forest Demon Deacons. A little bit of barbershop talk here, fellas, and you guys can chime in if you've got one that you want to bring into the conversation, 336-777-1600, or you can hit us up on Sports Hub Triad on Twitter with your suggestions. Who are the best freshman college basketball players you have ever seen? And we're going to go like round table. Basically, you get 30-45. You know how we do this. 30-45 seconds to explain your pick and why. And we'll let our guest, Mark Z, come in first.
All right, so since I'm in Johnny O's seat, I thought I would give him a Johnny O flavor. It's got to be Carmelo Anthony. So,
Nice.
Carmelo Anthony averaged 22 points, 10 rebounds per game. He saved the best for last in the finals, in the Final Four, scoring 33 points against Texas and 20 in the national title game against Kansas. Anthony equaled Mark McGuire's Final Four freshman scoring record from 1979. Look, got one national championship. I know I'm probably talking out of turn, but I'm pretty sure they won the Big East title as well that year. If they didn't, they were close, because I know the Big East was tough back in 2003, with UConn, Georgetown, teams like that. But this kid could have went straight to the pros, if he wanted to. Went there for 1 year, got the job done. I don't think you can argue with coming in for a year, being the best player on your team, and leading your team to a national championship.
Yeah, you got Jim Boeheim, his first national title ever, as long as Jim had been in the league.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that one. Carmelo's a great pick. Yeah. Rod, what you got, man?
Yeah, to me, the number one guy is a guy in the news right now who we're talking about almost every day since the trade deadline of the NBA, and that's Mr. Anthony Davis, was at Kentucky from 2011 to 2012. To me, he was the number one freshman ever. He was an NCAA tournament most outstanding player. He was the player of the year. He was a national defensive player of the year. And he was a number one overall pick in the NBA draft. I mean, then this guy went on to play on the Olympic team, which was almost another dream team to me. He played with, LeBron, Carmelo Anthony, who Mark just mentioned. I mean, this guy, he was outstanding, as a freshman to me. He's one of the best, if not the best, in my opinion.
I'm going to go old school a little bit.
Yeah, I got a couple of those too.
one of the first freshmen that I can remember in my lifetime that just made me be like, wow. Well, probably the second one. Kenny Anderson from Georgia Tech.
Nice.
This
I believe he stayed through sophomore year, and then he left early. But as a freshman, he was part of Lethal Weapon 3. It was him, Dennis Scott, and Brian Oliver.
I remember that.
Literally, they were the entire scoring for that Georgia Tech team. That Georgia Tech team ended up going all the way to the Final Four, the 1990 Final Four, where they would lose to a slightly better team, the 1990 UNLV Running Rebels. Yep. But they gave them a game in that as well. And then sophomore year, Brian Oliver and Dennis Scott were seniors, so they were gone. So it was Kenny's team, and it was basically a one-man show. But my man had one of the sweetest crossovers you'll ever see. And actually, I hope he's doing well, because if I'm not mistaken, he just suffered a stroke this past week, actually, now that I'm thinking about it. I have him on my list as one of the best freshmen I've ever seen. Just watching him cross dudes over out of their shoes, just ridiculous. One of the best point guards I've ever seen.
Good pick. I remember Kenny Anderson. Yeah.
I saw, you know, just total sidebar. You know how the P-Funk All-Stars were in Greensboro this year? Mm-hmm. Guess who was front row? Kenny Anderson.
Really?
Nice. He had his Funkadelic shirt on. I swear to God, I just went up to him, said hi to him, said I'm a big fan. He was like, oh, yeah, man. He's like, I'm here for the P-Funk show with George Clinton. Yep, so he was in Greensboro this week. All right, so this one I got right here. Can't leave off Derrick Rose.
That's a good one.
Although that never happened because he apparently had his SATs taken for him.
Right.
So you'll never find any trace of his existence in the NCAA or the tournament.
That's so crazy.
But we all saw how nasty he was. He averaged 21-6 and 6 assists during the NCAA tournament. If it wasn't for his inability to shoot free throws, he would also have raised a title that wouldn't have existed for John Calipari as well. But again, according to the NCAA, none of that ever happened.
Wow.
So that's I mean, you can't. I mean, one of the best athletes to ever play point guard.
Oh yeah.
Feel bad for the guy with his knees and all that stuff, but right. that was his peak almost at his freshman year of college.
Gosh, that's a good pick too.
Yeah, that is a good one.
What you got, Ron?
I'll go back to 89-90 year.
Oh, okay.
LSU, Shaquille O'Neal.
Oh, hey.
What's wrong with me?
Yeah,
who else can I think of?
He averaged 14 points a game, 12 rebounds a game, and right at 4 blocks per game. He became the first player in SEC history to have 115 blocks as a freshman at that time. And he finished top 10 in the country in rebounding. Now, remember, he wasn't this big, large monster that he was, you know, when he ended up at L.A. But during that time, he was a big man, and he was so quick off the floor. I mean, you didn't see a 7-footer who could really move the way that Shaq could move off that floor. And then, of course, you know, he went on to play with Penny Hardaway and, you know, the things that they got done.
Oh,
but Shaq as a freshman was something else.
That's a fantastic pick, too. I'm going to go back to 1991-92.
Okay.
I've talked about this team ad nauseum on this show. They're one of my favorite college basketball teams ever. I don't think you can have a conversation about best college freshman of all time without mentioning Chris Webber.
Okay, yeah.
I was asking a friend the other day.
Was he 81?
He was there 2 years. We're talking about freshmen, right?
No, I'm just talking about their freshmen.
Yeah, their freshmen.
The best players you've seen as freshmen? They didn't necessarily have to.
Gotcha.
Kenny Anderson was there through sophomore year,
too. 92, 93.
So 91, 92, then 92, 93.
Gotcha.
He averaged 15.5 points, 10 rebounds, and 2.5 blocks a game. A great passer. Fantastic passer. He doesn't get enough credit for that. He's one of the first guys I can think of where freshman year, I was like, you know what? He doesn't have to play college basketball. He could go to the NBA right now and be ready to go.
Yeah.
And that, to me, I just have so many fond memories of that squad and him and the swag and just everything else they were doing. They were on CBS every Saturday. And they were just playing somebody they didn't. I know they didn't win a Big Ten title. They didn't win a national championship. They didn't really win anything, but they did change the culture. And
they
this Duke team that everyone keeps talking about, they're not changing the culture. They're winning games, and they're hyped beyond belief. But that Michigan team was organic.
Something that you talked about, the changing of the culture? Because how old was I then? 13, you know, 12, whatever. So I was playing basketball, and you know, everyone wore baggy shorts, and everyone was trying to be like the Fab Five, right? But the crazy thing is now, it has nothing to do with Duke or the changing of the culture from them, but has anyone seen the total switch of what these players are doing now? The shorts that they're wearing now are shorter.
They're getting shorter.
And dudes are actually rolling shorts up so that they're, you know, the the elastic underneath the leggings, you know, the leggings are showing more.
I am not. Here
I've
for
never
this.
I've never seen it until this year. I was doing a game with Coach Alexander from A&T, Sir Alexander, and he was just like, yeah. He's like, I noticed it a couple years back. He's like, when I started doing radio, he's like, all of a sudden people rolling up their shorts and doing it that way.
Intern Aaron.
Yeah, as far as freshmen in college that I've seen personally, didn't really pan out in the pros, but I'm going Michael Beasley.
That was my next one.
I had him on my list, too.
Beasley. Michael Beasley was phenomenal at Kansas State.
Yep.
I remember him before the season saying, we're going to beat Kansas. You know, and at that time, they hadn't beat Kansas since, like, 1980-something. So everybody's just like, yeah, that's not going to happen. And then, lo and behold, they beat KU. And he had a huge season. He averaged like 26 points a game that season. He went crazy. He was averaging an insane amount of rebounds. I think over the first couple of games, he had already ripped down like 60 rebounds in like maybe five, six games. He ripped down 60 rebounds. It was incredible. So Michael Beasley in K-State was phenomenal. Just if you think of his pro career, it's kind of hard to remember that because it happened a while ago.
Yeah. And even in college, he had 28 double-doubles, which is a huge
record. 28 double-doubles in 33 games.
Yep. Crazy.
He averaged 26.2 points and 12.4 rebounds a night.
Yep.
National freshman record, 28 double-doubles. I think that still
stands.
Yeah,
because he broke Kevin Durant's record.
Yeah, gosh. Michael Beasley's a great pick.
You know who's another one, and people don't remember him because he changed his name for religious reasons.
I know exactly what you're talking about. Back in the 80s.
Yeah, 1989. Chris Jackson, a.k.a. Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf.
Oh, man. He
was a consensus All-American as a freshman.
He might have been Steph Curry before Steph Curry.
Oh, yeah.
You know, in terms of, like, everything.
He had 53 points as a freshman in 1988, in that his freshman season, as a consensus All-American. 53 points against Florida.
Where did we – is it on me? I'm sorry. Is that
– it was on Mark.
No, it was on me.
Oh, so sorry. Chris Jackson.
But, I mean, how are we leaving out Kevin Durant?
Yeah, I was wondering when his name was going to pop up.
No, that's fine.
Yeah. I was wondering when his name was going to pop. Go ahead, Ron.
Yeah, go ahead, Ron. My bad. No, that's fine. I just draw Kevin Durant, but yeah, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Kevin Durant, he played for Texas in 06, 07. This guy came out averaging 25, or just under 26 points a game, 11 rebounds as a freshman. He was the only player in the country to finish in the top four or top five in scoring and rebound, which he was in number four in both of them. Can you imagine that? As a freshman to be top four in scoring and four in rebounding as a freshman. Again, he was one of those who could have gone from high school directly to the pros.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, he let you know again what these one and done guys look like. And, you know, with Kevin Durant, you're like, wow, the guys we're seeing now, Zion Williamson in particular. I mean, hopefully we can't leave him off the list, although he hasn't finished his freshman year. I mean, to me, Zion's right up there with these guys that we've mentioned.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the season's not over, but yeah, I would put Zion up there.
You know what's so crazy too is cuz I'm going to do my dad's such a basketball historian, like what would someone like Lou Alcindor or Pete Maravich when you weren't allowed to play as a freshman have done as a freshman? I think that's something that, you know, always kind of gets lost too. Like Bill Walton was the same thing. They only got 3 years of playing because they were on the JV team when they still had JV squads. Mm-hmm. You know, there's probably some Carolina greats that you could throw on that list too.
I'm going to add one more here before we take a break. It's going to be kind of maybe a controversial pick. I'm not sure.
Really?
Okay.
I'm going to pick Steph Curry because it's controversial because people didn't really know him as a freshman.
Right.
I knew who he was because of Del Curry and find out, he has a son. Oh, he's a Davidson. Let me check this kid out. During that season, his freshman season, he established himself as one of the greatest pure shooters ever to play college basketball. He averaged 21.5 points a game. He made a freshman record 122 three-pointers during that season. And, of course, that's carried over a little bit to the NBA for him. But it wasn't until his sophomore year where he got picked because of the tournament run and then almost beating Kansas and everything. And then that next year, junior year, was when everyone in the country was focused on him because he came back.
Right.
And I think they played at Duke that year. They had a couple of games. But that Elite Eight run that they had his sophomore year, it was really set up by his freshman year because coming into that sophomore year, people were starting to pick up on, oh, okay, this is Dell's kid.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, he's a great three-point shooter. You got to watch him. And you started seeing teams his sophomore year forward starting to trail around, like double teaming him, trying to at least. But I would put Steph on there too.
Do you know that Davidson team that junior year, not the Elite Eight run, got left out of the NCAA tournament because they lost in the SoCon tournament, I think in the semis.
Yep.
And they were 17-1 that year in the conference or something crazy like that.
I think Aaron's got one more.
I'm just going to drop his name and I'm going to bow out. Allen Iverson.
I wasn't going to put Allen on there because I have issues with Allen Iverson.
I don't have any issues with AI. His freshman year, what was that, 94, he splashed on the scene. It was just incredible.
He averaged 2.9 steals a game as a Georgetown freshman, 20.4 points and 4.5 assists. They made it to the Sweet 16.
The only reason why I don't put him on that list is because someone like Derrick Rose like took his team to the finals and dominated the entire landscape. Whereas, listen, I was a huge Big East fan, UConn fan. I saw AI torch, but he also got the green light. Like John Thompson was like, here you go. He could take 30 shots a game. Mm-hmm. You know, like it was his show.
They didn't have a big man on this.
They didn't have a big man. They had a real athletic wing and power forward. And essentially, when AI was having an off night, they were like, you better go get some offensive rebounds. That was their game plan.
But again, I can see you picking Allen Iverson for the same reasons I picked Chris Webber, where Allen Iverson moved the culture. Like, right. You know what I mean?
Did.
Like,
sure.
Whether it's cornrows, tattoos, wearing baggy stuff to work. Yeah. I mean, like, Allen Iverson took what the Fab Five did and expanded it out even further to the point where the NBA had to make rules in terms of, okay, you can't dress this way when you're walking into the tunnel, whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever happened to that, by the way? Because, like, no one gave Russell Westbrook the memo that you're supposed to wear, like, a tie or whatever. I guess they did away with it. Because remember, for a little bit, with David Stern, you had to wear a tie and a suit coat.
I think it was an Allen Iverson rule, like you said.
Yeah, it was an Allen Iverson rule. And then it kind of went away. And now it's like you're seeing, like, Russell Westbrook will show up one night dressed as Steve Urkel.
Yeah.
He came one night dressed as, like, a street worker or something like that with a construction worker outfit on. A photographer he's come in one time. So, I mean, I don't know.
listen, guys. You guys are speaking of John Thompson. Now, who helped John Thompson get big back in 1981, 1982?
Ooh, who was a freshman? Patrick Ewing.
Patrick Ewing, man.
He was on my list also. And then I also had this guy named Michael Jordan who had a pretty good freshman year. Pretty good ending to a freshman season.
You could have Chris Mullin in there, too.
So there's quite a bit of freshmen.
There's so many good players.
Did we get any callers who wanted to talk about any freshmen, or no one called in?
I don't think so.
No one called in.
Okay.
All right.
That's because we killed it.
We killed it. Got them all in there. 336-777-1600 is the number to call if you want to chime in, or hit us up on Twitter at Sports Hub Triad. Coming up, NBA action. Charlotte was in action last night right here on the Sports Hub versus the Brooklyn Nets. We'll catch up with the Hornets to see if they can move up the playoff seedings. Plus, my Lakers are in a serious situation. LeBron might actually miss the playoffs. We might actually have a June this year without LeBron for the first time in 8 years. Like, let that marinate in for a second. We might have June NBA basketball this year with no LeBron James in it, and it might be his fault. We'll talk a little bit about what's going on with the Lakers. Plus, are the Bucks the biggest threat to the Warriors, or are the Rockets back? We'll catch up on the NBA next on the Rundown.
Shut up.
Shut up.
Sit down.
Are you ready?
Stand by.
You're listening to The Rundown with Desmond Johnson.
That's right.
The latest coverage of ACC sports, Panthers, Hornets, high school, NASCAR, and much more. Visit SportsCarolinaMonthly.com. From coverage of your favorite local teams, mid-majors, exclusive stories from our staff of writers, audio and video content updated daily. SportsCarolinaMonthly.com is your source for Carolina sports. Follow us on Twitter right now at SportsCarolina1 or on Facebook at Facebook.com/SportsCarolinaMonthly. And do not miss news daily. That's SportsCarolinaMonthly.com. Our Charlotte Hornets got back in the win column last night, defeating the Brooklyn Nets 123-112. Kemba Walker had 25 points. Jeremy Lamb added 22. Charlotte snapping a three-game skid to inch ahead of Orlando for eighth place in the Eastern Conference. And as we do every Saturday morning for you, we will run through the Eastern and Western Conference standings just to kind of see where everybody's at right now. Our Hornets are back into the eighth slot. They are 29-33. They are 3-7 in their past 10 games. Wasn't looking so hot. I heard a little bit of this game last night on the Sports Hub. They are playing really well. Keep in mind, the Hornets' remaining entire season will be broadcasted by Sports Hub Triad, including the playoffs if they make it in. WSJS Sports Hub is your new exclusive home for Charlotte Hornets basketball here in the Triad. The Hornets are taking on Dame Lillard and the Portland Trail Blazers tomorrow afternoon at 1 p.m. right here on the Sports Hub. I mean, at this point, the Hornets are what they are. I don't expect them to go on like a 9-game winning streak or anything like that, but it is something to note that it is right there in front of them. It's not like the Brooklyn Nets are that far ahead of them. They're 32-32. The Hornets are 29-33. I mean, they're literally what is that, like three games back of the sixth seed? So, I mean, you get into the sixth seed, then you might be able to take on the Indiana Pacers first round, who they're playing great. They're 41-22. They've won seven out of their last 10 games. But I would much rather the Hornets see the Pacers first round than the Bucks or the Raptors if they just get in as a 7 or 8 seed.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you there, but I'm still just frustrated with the Hornets. Come on, you are, what, 3 games below 500? Come on, Hornets.
What are they supposed to do? Like, I almost want them to go young. Like, and it seems like they've started that. I think someone's hurt, and Miles Bridges got the start the other night, which we, you know, our very own Haskell Shelton's been tooting that horn since the season began, Miles start. Yeah. I would love it for them to get Miles Bridges and Malik Monk in the starting lineup and just let these kids play with Kemba, probably Cody Zeller, and Nick Batum, I guess.
That sounds so painful. Go,
I mean, they moved him to shooting guard. He's been playing better. I will give him that. But I don't know if it's $25 million a year better, but he is playing better. So
right.
I could get with – well, no, because Monk would have to play shooting guard because you can't stick him anyplace else.
Put him at the three.
You'd have to put him back at the three. So it'd be Walker, Monk, Batum, Bridges, Zeller. For your starting lineup, and it's have Marvin come off the bench. Mm-hmm. Have I don't know what they're doing with Frank Kaminsky.
But the team that you just outlined is the team that you, I mean, it would come out to what you have right now, which is maybe a 500 team in the East or the West for that matter.
It's almost like they're kind of waiting on like mid round draft picks to kind of salvage them. Yeah, because they didn't do anything for the. During the trade deadline.
Which is ridiculous. Which that them whole not doing anything made me believe that they don't want to keep Kemba or they're expecting Kemba to leave, one or the other. That is, I mean, it's ridiculous.
Everything that's been out there, Kemba says he wants to stay and Jordan has said he wants to keep him because that's really his moneymaker. Like, if you don't have Kemba on this team, then why are you going to watch the Hornets? You know?
Right.
Like, what's the point of buying a ticket? He is the de facto face of the franchise.
He is, but you've got to do something to get him some help, man.
Oh, absolutely. And plus, if it's going the way it's going right now, if Kemba makes one of these three NBA, all NBA teams, then he qualifies for the Supermax. And if he qualifies for the Supermax, you're talking $240 million over the next 6 years or whatever it might be.
Right.
Now, Kemba's only 28, I think.
Yeah.
27, 28. So this deal would take him into his mid-30s. And typically in the NBA, that's kind of when you hit your prime, 30, 31, somewhere in there. Do you want to give Kemba Walker $240 million? Or do you want to let him go for nothing, basically, at this point?
At this point, you know, with the way salaries are, I mean, I think I talked about this last time I was, you know, on the panel, is just like, this is just where the money is now. It's not like baseball where you could be like, well, we looked at your last year and, you know, it's an uncapped sport, so we'll offer you $12 million instead of the $25. Like, these are slotted in. Like with the cap, like, you know, like Dez said, if he makes an all NBA team, he gets a supermax. Like that's automatically kicked in, and that's collectively bargained. So
they'll already qualify for a max,
right? So there's no, someone's going to pay him the max. Like whether it's a team that he wants to play for is another reason. But I think he stays. But I'll tell you one thing, guys: the Magic are playing really well, and I don't think the Hornets are going to make the playoffs. I think the Magic are actually going to slide into that 8 spot. And drop the Hornets back.
The Magic, you say?
Yeah.
They're right there with the Hornets. They
just beat the Warriors.
They sure did.
Looking at the rest of the Eastern Conference, the Bucks are still number one, 48-14, rolling. They got a game. They had a game last night against the Lakers, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, they beat the Lakers.
And they beat the Lakers. Yeah. The Raptors are still in second. The Pacers, man, even after losing to Oladipo, they're still rolling right along. They're 7-3 in their last 10. They have a above 500 away record, 24-8 at home. They're 41-22 on the season. It doesn't look like they're going to fall anytime soon. They're battling with the 76ers right now for the third slot. I still say the 76ers have the best starting five in the Eastern Conference when they added Tobias Harris.
Yeah, I agree with that.
That made it to me where, okay, I would have said the Celtics at the beginning of the year, but then the Celtics started messing around with their starting lineup, trying to put Hayward in there and getting Irvin back in. Right behind the 76ers are the Celtics in the fifth slot.
Is Hayward completely healthy?
I don't think so. I think it takes a while to come back from a completely broken ankle, or leg, or whatever it was that ended up breaking. Are they better without Kyrie Irving, the Celtics?
Such a tough question.
That is a tough question, man. I'll be honest with you. I'm going to have to say yes, because I think in the last six games with or without Kyrie Irving, they won the last six without him. They lost the last six with him. And I also think these guys out here who are playing, it's almost like they don't want to play with Kyrie Irving.
Or with each other.
Or with each other.
Yeah, yeah, it's really weird.
Yeah, it's more than weird. As a matter of fact, it's one of those deals where you're like, hey, did Kyrie bring something over from the Cavaliers? Because when I look back over at the Cavaliers, you know, to me, we have a lot of criticism of LeBron James. But LeBron James is the ultimate teammate as well as a leader. Because when you look at the stats, that's LeBron's team, right?
Right, right.
Well, guess what? Kyrie took the most shots on that team. He took more than LeBron.
He would take the last shots a lot of times.
And yes, he would. And more than anybody else on the team. So now, Kyrie, you're moving over to a team, you know, who has Alfred, Jason Tatum, these guys, and then you're coming in pretty much kind of doing the same thing. It's almost like you're playing one-man hero ball just a little bit. And sometimes these guys are just looking at Kyrie like, hey, what are you doing when they're on the floor? It's almost like, when are you going to pass? And then Kyrie ends up with stats like 30 points, 2 assists.
Yeah.
30 points, 3 assists.
Yep.
I mean, you know, then these guys start feeling some kind of way because, you know, Jason Tatum, Al Horford, all those guys, they can play too, man. And I just don't know. I just think they don't like playing with Kyrie for whatever reason it is. I can't put my finger on it. I don't know if it's a locker room issue or what it is. But were you going to say something, Mark?
Oh, before no, I think let me get Sawyer wanted to chime in on this.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Go ahead. I just saw this quote the other day. Now we're talking about the Celtics. It kind of, you know, sums up everything. Marcus Smart told reporters the other day that the Celtics are just not on the same page during his recent slide. When Kyrie was asked if he agreed with Marcus's assessment, he responded, "That's just Marcus's opinion, confirming that the Celtics are indeed not on the same page."
That's right. Exactly.
I mean, and then I'm seeing this quote here from Marcus Smart, too, after last night because they beat the Wizards. "Tonight was fun for everybody. You could see that." He scored 16 points. Quote, "Tonight the ball was popping. It was moving. We made every right play." So it's almost like last year when Irving was out during the playoff stretch when they had
Rozier,
Scary Terry, like running the point guard. You had Jaylen Brown in the starting lineup. Yeah. You had Jason Tatum playing well. They were moving the ball. Like you could see, like,
the
okay, they only need
all
they
the
only
time.
Need like a couple more pieces.
Yes.
But I never thought that Kyrie was going to be one of those pieces. It didn't feel like it was like a round peg square.
But
you know what I mean, square peg round hole.
But let me ask you guys a question, because this is what it comes down to, right? In the NBA, you need a closer. You need a guy who can kind of take your team to the next level, and that's what Kyrie was for LeBron, right? In that Cleveland series against the Warriors. I mean, he hit the biggest shot. Obviously, LeBron with defense, with that block, the whole deal. We all know that, right? Last year, the Celtics didn't have that. Like they showed a lot of, you know, great play. Like you were talking about ball movement, the ball's popping and all that stuff. But guess what? When it comes down to it, who takes the last shot? Is it Tatum? Is it Rozier? Is it Marcus Smart? When you have too many guys who are kind of that B side, and they can get you there to the fourth quarter, but once it's game time, once it's winning time, you need a guy like Kyrie who can take the bull by the horns and win a game.
And then, and now you got the added thing on top of it where these younger guys with the Celtics, the same thing with the Lakers, except the Celtics have a little bit more experience. They've been in the playoffs. They're hearing that they might be on the trading block for Anthony Davis. So it's like, having to deal with that going to the offseason. We got Wayne on the line from Greensboro. He wants to chime in on the Charlotte Hornets. Wayne, what's up, man? You're listening to The Rundown.
Hi, guys. Great show as usual.
Hey, man, thanks.
Thanks, buddy.
Of course, I've called in and disagree with lots of the stuff you're saying. I think one thing that's happened here recently, the last game they redid the bench, and I think for the first time in his career, MKG did not play coach's decision, and Malik Monk didn't play, and that's who I want to talk about.
Okay.
You guys keep saying, well, Malik Monk should play. He's had opportunities, and Steve Clifford was right. He didn't play the guy because he wasn't any good, and he's not any better this year. Everybody thinks of him as a great three-point shooter. He shoots 32% from three-point and only 38% from the field, and he doesn't play defense. And his idea of offense is to try to impersonate Harden, and there's no future for the guy. We should trade him in the offseason. He was total garbage last year, and this year he's improved. He's just regular garbage.
Jeez.
Thanks for the call, Wayne. No, I agree with Wayne, because remember, I was trying to throw Malik Monk into trade things before the
Washington.
I was trying to send him off to the Wizards to get Bradley Beal down here.
I remember that.
And I had folks telling me, no, we need to hold on to Malik Monk and see what he turns into. Charlotte Hornet fans are tired of waiting for players to develop. They yeah. just are. Like they are at their wit's end waiting on prospects to get magically better when it's very clear that some of these guys are not. Miles Bridges, I like. I think he's a good building block. I think he's someone that we can build around. Him, Kemba, you get another guy in there, and then fill in the blanks with everything else. Malik Monk, I think he's tradable. I think you should actually in the offseason seriously consider trying to get some kind of assets for a lot of this junk that's on this roster right now.
Is it
worth anything?
That's what I'm saying. To Wayne's point, like I don't know. I personally, thanks for the call, Wayne, but I don't agree with Wayne in this respect for a couple of reasons. One, Malik Monk is only 21 years old. He has plenty of time to develop. Dez just talked about how you don't even hit your prime into the NBA until you're 30,
usually,
right?
Usually, yeah.
So you're trying to tell 32. Me that you're going to trade away a guy who's only been in the NBA for 2 years. Yeah, he was a top 10 pick, but in the NBA, that doesn't mean anything. This isn't the NFL. Like, when you're a top 10 pick, unless you're the number one pick in the draft, pretty much people are like, well, I mean, we picked Bismack Biyombo number 8 overall. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
don't
so
remind me.
There are legit prospects that you can hold on to, and you got a kid who can, you know, jump through the ceiling, who has some flaws, sure, but I mean, listen, he's averaging what, 9 points a game. He's not shooting the three that well, but I just can't see trading him if you're gonna what was the trade this year? Marc Gasol? Like what's that gonna do for you?
I think this could have happened if John Wall hadn't gotten hurt. But originally, towards the beginning of the year, we were talking about John Wall and Bradley Beal having issues with each other and that they both might be on the trading block.
Right.
And I was like, Bradley Beal would be a perfect fit for the Charlotte Hornets because he's making $24-25 million a year. That's about Nick Batum's salary.
Cheap.
So you put a package of Nick Batum in there so it matches salary up. You give the Wizards Malik Monk because they're going to want some talent coming back, and you give them like a protected first. Boom. You send that off. You get Bradley Beal. Now you've got – Kemba has someone that's going to get 20 points with him every night because that's the main problem with the Hornets. Kemba, he'll go off for 27 one night, and then he'll have like 12 the next because he's doing everything. He doesn't have anybody else that can score consistently. It would have been Kemba, Bradley Beal, Miles Bridges. That's your core. You run with that, and you just see what happens. But
see, I just feel like if you keep Monk, and this is where the Hornets messed up in the past. They should have done that with MKG a long time ago. MKG still had some value as a defensive player, as a rebounder, and they kept him. And unfortunately, he's into the void essentially. He doesn't even play.
Yeah.
Like that was the number two pick in the draft. And you didn't get anything for him. That's the issue.
And that draft was the draft we should have had Anthony Davis because we were coming off the Bobcats 7-win season and somehow still missed the number one pick.
And I'm on the Hornets website or their team page. Miles Bridges is averaging like 6 points a game, guys. So like let's slow down about how Miles Bridges is like the greatest thing since sliced bread. Just because the dude has fancy dunks doesn't mean he's that great of a player.
Well, no, I'm just saying there is no other power forward on this roster that I think deserves the playing time. Like he's a rookie. Like I expect him to get better. He's going to have ups and downs and valleys, but I can't name another power forward we have that's as versatile as Miles or as athletic. And this is Kemba's prime right now. I want to put thoroughbreds around him. I don't want him running with Marvin Williams and Bismack Biyombo. Give him some guys that can run with him and actually help him score. And plus, it would just help Miles' confidence to be out there more. And like I said, he's starting now due to someone getting hurt. I can't remember who it is. But he's been starting the past couple of games. We do have Matt on the line from Greensboro. He wants to talk Charlotte Hornets, too. Matt, what's up, man? You're on the line with the rundown.
Hey, guys. I'm in agreement on Monk. He's young, and it's only a couple of years, but I'm starting to, patience. Usually you see if a guy is going to be any good. He's had a couple stretches where he's been decent, but so inconsistent. And since the All-Star game, All-Star break, it's just been terrible and didn't even play last night, as the other caller said. But I want to get your guys' opinion on Kemba. Do you think he's staying? I mean, why would you? And I love Kemba. I mean, he's really the only reason I watch the Hornets. I might be more of a Kemba fan than a Hornets fan, so... I mean, other than that they can pay him, more than anybody else, does that mean more? And I know he loves Charlotte, too, but does that mean more than, going out there and trying to win a championship? Because, as you mentioned just a minute ago, his window is closing, He's creeping up on the 30s.
Yeah. Thanks for the call, Matt. Me, personally, $240 million is generation-type changing money. That's money where your family can eat for like 2-3 generations after you're gone. Like I find it very hard to imagine Kemba turning that down, because I think he's going to make like third team All NBA, yeah. And I think it's going to kick in the Supermax, and he's going to be, I mean, 240 over 6 years. You're talking like $40 million a year.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Like, yeah, like I no one else can offer the same amount of years, and no one else can offer the same amount of just any other place he goes, he won't be the face of the franchise.
Yeah,
he'll be a sidekick to somebody else.
And it's. Thanks for the call, man. There's two schools of thought, right? There's the Dame Lillard thought where I'm not joining anybody. You want to come join me in my hometown, and I'm with it. And because he's pretty much said that, like, that's just not how he rolls. And I think Kemba's in that camp, to be honest with you. And then there's obviously the LeBron and KD camp where you kind of join up or you kind of meet somewhere, right? I don't know if Kemba's – you listen, I watched Kemba when he was young as a UConn guy before I moved down south, and – he just seems like a guy that's rooted in family, and I think his family's completely moved down here now with his mom. And
I don't think he's going anywhere.
I don't think he's going anywhere, guys. I think he's staying
for life, or at least until they want to get rid of him.
Max or Super Max, and he's staying.
Yeah, I mean, taking him at his word, I believe that he'll stay. You know, he did an interview, I think it was on ESPN, if I'm not mistaken, at the beginning of January, and he was saying that he's trusting Mitch Kupchak to do what he needed to do. He said, Mitch Kupchak knows exactly what we need around here. He knows exactly how to build this roster. And so he was like, well, I'm not getting involved beyond that. And he was just like, you know, I'm willing to wait and see how it develops. And so I'm assuming he'll be in the midst of a max deal as Mitch Kupchak tries to build this roster. But in the midst of that deal, you know, I don't know. You know, people can demand trades. It's not like we haven't seen it happen before.
Yeah, I mean, he could always have that ability. It depends on the way they write the deal. Real quick, Aaron.
Kemba's going to stay in Charlotte. He's going to get paid. They're going to waste him. They're going to be 7th and 8th. And then the Hornets aren't going to be good. They're going to keep being terrible until Jordan sells the team.
Wow.
So it's great day outside.
Yeah.
Wow. Thank you for that, Aaron.
The Hornets are going to be terrible.
I don't think Jordan's going to sell. There's no reason for Michael Jordan to sell this team. I mean, from the outside, people are like, oh, he's a horrible owner, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Does anyone realize how much the worth of NBA teams have increased since he bought the Hornets?
Right.
They've, like, doubled in value.
Right.
Like, he's not going to sell them anytime soon.
They're making tons of money, but they stink.
Yeah, but he's not that he's fine with
the
that.
The Cowboys have stunk for a while, and they still a brand. I mean, that's the Hornets
true.
Are a brand.
Yeah, but we're also,
I mean, we're not just stinking, though, man.
We're
I mean,
also
you
not
know.
In Dallas.
Cowboys
are
doing
with you. That was just for Rod.
Now, listen, when it comes to the Hornets, you know, I don't think Jordan will sell the team, but I do think what Jordan needs to do is kind of step back a little bit. You know, we've heard the stories that people just want to agree with what Jordan says
right.
when he's in the room. They want to go along with Jordan. They want to say, hey, we're throwing this out there. Jordan, is that okay with you? You know, that part, I think, is what's screwing it up. You know what I mean? But if he just kind of steps back, do a Robert Kraft, you know, do the Hines, you know, folks up in Pittsburgh, and just step back and let management do what management was put in place to do, then I think we've got a chance. And the only thing he has to do is, just like the Federal Reserve, keep an open checkbook. That's it.
The one thing I'll disagree with you on is I don't think he wants to be involved with anything that Robert Kraft is doing right now.
I think
I was talking to business standpoint. Okay.
coming up, Sports Carolina Monthly contributor Brandon Blakeney got a chance to chat with North Carolina A&T head coach Jay Joyner. The Aggies are currently in second place in the MEAC with an 11-3 conference record. They're trailing North Carolina Central by 2 games, but the Aggies will face Central this Thursday night on the Sports Hub. The conference may be up for grabs during that game. We'll get the lowdown on the Aggie season. Plus, Bryce Harper finally signed the biggest contract in the history of North American pro sports on Thursday. We'll look at the 13-year, $330 million deal. And did Harper make a mistake by signing that deal? Next on the Rundown.
Clap your hands and stomp your feet.
Yeah!
Going to be one big party.
Yeah, I'm on.
Back to the Rundown with Desmond Johnson.
Hey Dash fans, BB&T Ballpark turns 10 this season. Join the Dash in celebrating a decade of fun and reserving your tickets in advance. The Dash's home slate begins on Thursday, April the 11th. Fans can purchase single-game tickets for as low as $8 by calling 336-714-2287 or visiting winstonsalem-dash.com. You still have time to get in on our poll from earlier today. Who would you like to see take over Jason Witten's spot on Monday Night Football? Booger McFarland, Peyton Manning, or Greg Olsen? 336-777-1600 if you want to chime in on that as well. Plus, we are just getting some breaking news. Intern Aaron just poked his head in and told us that friend of the radio station, Brant Wilkerson, new from the News and Record, is reporting that Zion Williamson is out for today. So he will not be playing later on today as Duke takes on Miami and tries to avoid going on a two-game losing streak. Sports Carolina Monthly's Brandon Blakeney sat down to chat with North Carolina A&T head coach Jay Joyner to discuss the two-year turnaround in the Aggies program. 2 years ago, A&T finished the 2016-17 season 3-29 and 1-15 in the MEAC in Coach Joyner's first season. Now, 2 years later, the Aggies are 11-3 in conference and sit in second place. Brandon chops it up with Coach Joyner from the North Carolina A&T Aggies, now on the Rundown.
You are listening to The Rundown with Desmond Johnson. I'm Brandon Blakeney here with a special exclusive interview with North Carolina A&T basketball head coach Jay Joyner. Coach Joyner, welcome to the show, man. Appreciate you joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, yeah, no doubt, no doubt. So, Coach, you guys find yourselves in a good position right now, fighting for that regular season MEAC title in second place. You've been rolling through conference play, riding a two-game winning streak so far. What do you accredit it to this turning this thing around?
Recruiting the right players. You know, great players make great coaches. Mm-hmm. You know, their hard work, you know, accepting coaching, you know, without these young men, you know, I wouldn't be on air talking to you. So I credit, you know, I give them a lot of credit because without them, you know, shoot, I'm not coaching.
For sure, Coach. You mentioned putting in work on the recruitment trail. I see that you guys have really been active locally, seeming like you guys are trying to take back your own backyard. Recently offered Nick McMullen out of, I think, Smith High School. Just speak on, have you guys, just the efforts of reestablishing those connections around the triad?
Well, I think anytime you can recruit local players is always going to help your program, you know. But in recruiting local players, you have to recruit the right local players mm-hmm. because, you know, everybody, you know, wants to play right away. So you have to, you know, not only recruit the right local players, you have to spread it out as well. So, you know, with Cam Langley being a sophomore, mm-hmm. he'll be, you know, a junior next year. You know, I think it's time to get back after it locally.
Oh, yes, most definitely. A lot of talent here in the Hoop State in North Carolina. You mentioned Cam Langley. He's been having a really good season. What have you been seeing from these guys out there, and what is the mindset heading into the final stretch these last two games?
Well, we talk about finishing the job, you know. Basketball is a long season. Everyone knows it. You know, their mindset is simple. You know, we have to finish the job. And we have two regular season games left at home. And, you know, we got to play the right way. And hopefully we're able to, you know, close out the homestand undefeated in conference.
Yeah, you guys started off rough in non-conference. What was the mindset just in the locker room keeping the guys positive and keeping them buying into this long season, like you said? It's a grind.
Well, yes. We put together a very tough schedule.
Yes, sir.
And, you know, coming into the season, we knew out the gate we were going to be playing a very talented UNCG program. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I thought we had an opportunity to beat UNCG. It was a, you know, well-fought match. Mm-hmm. Came down to the wire for the most part. Last 3-4 minutes of the game, you know, we didn't close it out. And after you lose that game, you know, shoot, we're at Wake, and, you know, the rest is history. You talk about Wake, Maryland, Marshall, Hofstra. But I knew this group was talented, all right? So as a coach, you just have to, you know, remain positive and you coach them the same way that you would coach them any other time. And, you know, to their credit, I mean, since that start, we won 16 games.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so it's just, like I said, a testimony to hard work and perseverance.
You mentioned the earlier matchup with UNCG, Crosstown. I don't know if rival is the right word, but, you know, Crosstown, you guys are definitely competing against one another for the same recruits, playing each other non-conference. Is that something that we can expect to continue to see you guys competing against each other, maybe that rivalry continuing to grow over the next several years?
Yes. I mean, we'll be playing UNCG for the next 3 years. Okay. All right. This is the first year. We'll be at UNCG next year, and then the following year they'll come back to the Corbett Center. You know, Wes Miller is a good friend of mine. I have nothing but respect for him.
Great coach, yes, sir.
And I think it's great for the city.
Speak on that energy. What is the energy in Greensboro right now around the program and, you know, heading into crunch time?
Well, when I first took over the job 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, what have you, when you start turning around the program, okay, you have to start winning. And mm-hmm. my first full year, okay, didn't go too well. And, you know, the stands weren't packed. And you're talking about, you fast forward, you know, to last season, mm-hmm. okay, the stands were packed. And now everybody's expecting us to win every night, you know, we step on the floor. So, you know, it's been a huge turnaround. And, you know, the city's behind us, you know, the city's behind, you know, UNCG. It just makes it a fun city to play basketball in, to be brutally honest.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Now, you guys are really rolling. What is it going to take, and what would it mean to you guys to bring home that regular season conference title in year three? Like you said, you've been reestablishing the culture here.
Well, mathematically speaking, you know, we're going to need a little help at this point.
Mm-hmm. Norfolk State, yes, sir.
Yeah, with two regular season games left, we're going to need some help from other teams, and I'm not sure if Norfolk will lose, you know, two
mm-hmm.
Or not, you know, but, you know, that's really not our focus at this point, to be honest with you. It's just mm-hmm. Our focus right now is to get better each game. You know, we have two more regular season games to really fine tune some things mm-hmm. before we head into conference tournament. You know, when the smoke clears for our conference, it's about 3 days in March. And, you know, we're a one bid, you know, league, and whoever gets that bid, you know, coming out of the Scope Arena in Norfolk goes to the NCAA tournament. So regular season title would be great,
mm-hmm.
okay? But ultimately, you know, the ultimate goal is to go dancing in March.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And, Coach, I definitely want to wrap up with you. I know you're a busy guy, but I just want to say thank you for tuning in and joining the show today. I wish you guys the best of luck moving forward. Definitely, you guys are doing a great job representing for the culture and the triad, not just Greensboro. So thank you again.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me.
That's North Carolina A&T basketball head coach Jay Joyner. Tune in today on the Sports Hub to hear the Aggies take on Florida A&M. Spencer Turkin and Cy Alexander on the call. 3:30 on WCOG 93.7 FM. And WMFR 104.9 FM. Aggie basketball action on the Sports Hub. Now, back to Dez and the fellas on the Rundown.
Thanks, Brandon. Bryce Harper signed a 13-year, $330 million deal on Thursday to the Philadelphia Phillies. The deal is a team-friendly deal, with Harper averaging around about $25 million per year for the life of the contract. The outfielder asked for no opt-out clauses and no trade clauses in the deal, basically committing to the Phillies for the rest of his career. He will be
39,
yeah, when this is over with. Who won here? Why did Harper go for the longer deal instead of a shorter deal with more money per season, as reported that the Dodgers had offered to him?
I listened to Mark Teixeira on Get Up the other day, and I think he made a couple good points. One, that the Phillies are probably looking at this where 4 or 5 years down the road, the NL is going to go to the DH, so they can look to him in his later in his career, when he's in his mid-30s, that they can DH him and not have an issue and still have his bat. And the other part of it was, you know, he mentioned how when he went to his agent, which was the same agent that Bryce Harper used, Scott Boras, there were a group of teams that wanted him to play, right? And this is when he was leaving Texas and he signed a deal with the Yankees. There was a specific tax. Like, if you want me to play on the West Coast, I need you to pump in more money because of taxes, but because I have to move my family, et cetera. And Bryce Harper was talking about Philly, but I think he wanted LA. I think he wanted the Yankees. I think he wanted the Red Sox, those big market teams. And I think that's why you saw three extra years and $30 million extra dollars to add it to the list. That was kind of like the East Coast tax if I'm not going to go play for the Yankees or the Dodgers.
Yeah, just kind of piggybacking off of that. So out of the $330 million that he's going to get from the Phillies, he'll net about $184 million after federal taxes, state and local taxes as well. So even after taxes, the deal still remains the most lucrative of all reported, beating Juan Carlos Stanton's deal of $325 million that he signed with the Marlins, and now he's with the Yankees. The Giants reportedly offered $310 million over 12 years, but California has the highest state individual income tax.
Sure.
So Harper would have netted about $161 million on that deal. The Dodgers also showed interest. They offered a short term deal, $168 million over 4 years. So he would have got about $89 million off of that. So I'm kind of answering my own question here as to why he ended up going with the Phillies. And I've never seen this before. I've never seen a guy that's considered, a top, I don't know, top three, top five player in the entire league, basically holding out until a month before everything's about to kick off, and then signs the biggest deal in the history of sports. So apparently Scott Boras knew what he was doing while they were doing this. I'm just kind of – the Nats offered 10 years, $300 million at the end of last season, and I was questioning that until we went into the last break and we started looking it up. Apparently the Nationals – they offer that, but $100 million of that $300 million was going to be deferred money. So it would have paid him until he was 60, but it would not have been exactly like the way it would have been laid out. So it would really have been like a $200 million deal, I guess.
Yeah, the Nationals were planning on leveraging some of that money. And what they were planning on doing was making some money off of that $100 million. Mm-hmm. You know, as long as they didn't put it with somebody like Bernie Madoff, they would have made some money. But, Bernie. You know, you put it with a Bernie, you're going to lose it all. And then you're going to owe this guy. But that was the thing. You know, he was going to get paid until 60, whereas, you know, maybe Bryce was saying, I might not live till 60. Let me get my money right now.
Yeah, I want it right now. Yeah. So I can see why he did this. And then I mentioned this also, too, off the air. The fact that his average salary is about $25 million per year, to me, that tells me that the Phillies are not done. And whenever he becomes a free agent, I need to go look it up. I think they're going to go after Mike Trout.
I tell you what, the Philly dugout, that his teammates are happy that he is there. I don't know if you guys saw it, but they did some interviews on ESPN, and they were interviewing a lot of the other Philly players, mm-hmm. and they were like, oh, man, it's World Series time now. We've got Bryce Harper. They were elated.
They did a lot in the offseason.
And this is strictly a stats thing. So I'm looking at the player value on like Sports Reference or baseballreference.com. I mean – we talk about him being like a top five player. The stats don't bear it out.
I know.
You know, he's if you look at just what he's averaging in his career, he's a .279 hitter, which, you know, average is not what it used to be now. His on base percentage is below .400, which is not elite. It's .380, which is close, .388. He's had 184 home runs, which is close to about 30 to 35 home runs a year. That's if you look at it, I was listening to a guy talk about it that's like a real, I think it might have been Buster Olney on ESPN talking about how if you just look at the numbers and it was just a blind resume, that's like a $7 million player. And this guy's making $25 up to $330 million. And a part of it is because it's Bryce Harper. He's been labeled the chosen one just like LeBron was right out of high school. And he's still only 26 years old, the whole deal. But we talked about this off the air. If this dude is worth $330, what's Mike Trout worth?
Well, looking at this stuff now about Mike Trout and what the Phillies are saying. Team owner John Middleton had said he wanted to, quote, spend money and possibly be stupid about it, but no one was going to begrudge him for landing only one superstar. That's why they did not go after Machado, because they're saving money to go after Trout, who will become a free agent after the 2020 season. So, I mean, he's got another, 2 years?
2 years.
There, and then they can go after him, and he'll be, 28 or something like that at that point, too?
The stat that everyone talks about in baseball is WAR, right? Wins above replacement. Bryce Harper's wins above replacement has only been above 5 once. He had his MVP season, he had a 10, which is like Mike Trout every year. So, I mean, if you look at it, it's 5.2, 3.7, 1.1, 1.5, 4.7. That's a mediocre player.
Right.
And last year he had a mediocre season.
Now, the Mike Trout loves the Phillies.
Apparently, he likes
not
Philadelphia.
The Phillies, he loves Philadelphia, I should say. He makes his offseason home in New Jersey. And Bryce Harper doing this type of deal opens up that possibility. And to be honest, to answer your question, Mark, Yahoo Sports is basically saying if he continues his current pace, Trout figures to shatter Harper's record possibly by nine figures. Signing Trout to play with Harper would likely require a commitment of at least $60 million per year for just two players. But that's cost of adding a surefire Hall of Famer and a likely Hall of Famer in free agency. So, I mean, you're basically talking about Harper would be at about 25 per, Trout probably at about 35 per.
If he hits the open market, and I know I'm biased because I'm a Yankee fan, but the Yankees would throw like $600 million to this dude.
How did this get to the point where baseball is just throwing? We're getting to the point where someone's going to be a $1 billion contract in 10 years
because baseball. The silly thing is like if you they did this thing where all these small market teams, you know, we can't pay players. It's a joke. They can. They all these owners have buco bucks that are just like they just kind of hoard from the fans and they try to say, oh, well, we're going to do a $50 million payroll this year. Come on, man. Everybody has money.
Sorry.
Everybody in baseball has money.
When I did the drive, I think on Monday, me and Josh were doing our hot takes, and my hot take was, I don't think in light of the Machado deal, I don't think a baseball player should be worth, you know, $300 million or whatever it was. But Josh's take on it, so see what you guys think, was that baseball is such like a demanding, you know, almost every single day they're playing a game, and since there's no cap, like it's worth it to throw $300-400 million at these players because they have to play almost every single day for such amount of time.
I think it might be worth it if it's like the player's 26 when he signs,
right.
But like
that's
Alex
the issue.
Arias was 32 when he signed his second extension, and
which was dumb, and the Yankees wanted out of it. They
and
actually
he didn't even finish
forced
it.
Him to retire.
Yeah, he couldn't even finish it because his body broke down. Like if you're young, then I could see you signing a 10-year deal or whatever. But if you're already over the age of 30,
sure,
and a team is throwing a 10-year deal at you for $300 million.
You jump at it.
That's great for the player, but that's horrible for. Look at Albert Pujols, like right now.
Yeah,
right.
32.
They're still paying him.
Well, let me just throw one more thing into this. When you're talking about long term contracts, like if a radio station said, "Hey, Mark, we want to give you a 10-year contract for X amount of money, you're going to do a radio show, blah blah blah," I'd be excited about it. But they don't know what's going to happen 5 years down the road. And in baseball, like A-Rod, all of a sudden gets popped for steroids. Did the Yankees expect that to happen where they had to now suspend him for the year?
I think the Yankees knew he was doing
well, maybe, but what I'm saying is like you don't know what could happen from the guy who's 26 to now he's 39. What if Bryce Harper gets into a Robert Kraft situation? I mean, now all of a sudden that value starts to diminish. I think it's silly to throw out that kind of length because you don't know what's going to happen to a guy 5 years.
I would think that they have parameters in the deal where they can break it for behavior of that sort.
But
I would think they would protect
themselves.
But
it almost never happens because the player has just as good of lawyers that can kind of counteract that language.
That's true. Aaron?
I'm thinking two names, one to go with Bryce Harper, the other to go with the absurd amount of money baseball throws around. Bobby Bonilla is still getting paid.
So he'll get paid longer than this contract, actually.
He's going to get paid until 2035.
Oh, yeah, and this contract ends 2032, I think, so he'll still be getting paid.
He's getting paid almost $2 million a year.
Best contract ever.
I hadn't seen him play baseball in forever.
He hadn't.
Yeah.
I mean, you weren't alive last time he played baseball.
Yeah, you know what I mean? 11.
That's what you call winning a lottery.
And then I'm also thinking of, as far as Bryce Harper goes, the only name I can think of is Jonathan Papelbon. It's the only guy I can think of. Remember that? What was that? 2-3 years ago?
When
Papelbon choked him out in the dugout?
Oh, yeah. That's right.
He was right all along.
Maybe that's why he didn't want to come back to the Nets. Coming up next, a little football talk. Coach Ron Rivera had some comments on Cam Newton and the Panthers' plans for their quarterback position depth. Plus, Jason Witten unretiring and returning to the Dallas Cowboys. Rod gives us his take as a Cowboys fan on what this means for Big D. Plus, Patriots owner Robert Kraft got caught doing bad things. You didn't think that we were going to not talk about this, did you? Well, we are. We're going to get into the meat of this coming up here next. Will he have to give up ownership of the Patriots? We'll talk a little bit of football next on The Rundown.
Okay, let's go.
You're listening to The Rundown with Desmond Johnson.
NFL Carolina Panthers talk brought to you by Giada's Trattoria. Giada's Trattoria restaurant in Kernersville on Main Street with their signature stone oven, culture of hospitality, and North Carolina's best pizza. Giada's lets you and your family and friends share an authentic Italian experience with a twist. Everything is better by the stone oven at Giada's. Little Carolina Panther talk here on The Rundown. Desmond Johnson, Rod Funderburk, Mark Zanetto. in the house. Cam Newton's rehab from his second shoulder surgery in three off seasons has gone so well that the Carolina Panthers currently do not plan to pursue a veteran quarterback in free agency. Coach Ron Rivera said Thursday at the NFL scouting combine in Indianapolis that all reports on the 2015 league MVP have been, quote, positive, and that he's happy with the depth the team has at quarterback with Taylor Heinicke and Kyle Allen. I remember, Rod, you were very high on Taylor Heinicke at the end of the season when they both got some time to get in there and play.
Mm-hmm.
Are you guys okay with Taylor Heinicke and Kyle Allen being the backup quarterbacks if Cam is healthy going into next season?
Yeah, I mean, I'm okay with Heinicke still being, you know, one of the backups. I'd just like to see those guys get more reps, you know, during training camp as well as during the preseason games. You know, reps is what's going to make your quarterback play, you know, matter when it counts. I mean, reps are very, very, very important, which goes back to my point that if they decide to let Colin Kaepernick play, you know, he is not a bad backup quarterback, although he's been out a year, and I understand that.
Longer than that, right?
But you're talking about
– it's been a couple years now.
A couple years. Yeah. Regardless of how long he's been out, I mean, he's had as many reps as anybody. But, I mean, like as in a backup role, I mean, you can't – there's some starter quarterbacks in the NFL that I would choose Colin Kaepernick over than some guys who are starting. But Heinicke's fine. Heinicke, I mean, I have no quarrels with Heinicke. You know, I think he got hurt toward the end of last year, if I'm not mistaken.
He did.
Yeah.
The game he started, I think it was, I don't remember who they were playing, but he came in, got hurt, came back in.
Yeah, and got threw hurt. A touchdown.
Yeah,
when he came back,
and then Kyle Allen had to play the next week because I think he broke his shoulder or something. I can't remember what he did.
So hopefully he's okay, too. Hopefully he's healed. You know, and that's the thing. You don't know how these injuries are going to affect you when the season goes on. But, you know, to me, Cam has quite a few years left, and I think he'll be okay. And I think that the Panthers will be okay with Cam in the driver's seat. I think that Cam, it's time for Cam to get back to, you know, playoff contention mode. Also, you know, the Panthers have bad seasons every other season.
Right.
This last season was a bad season.
Yep.
So I expect the Panthers to roll this season.
It's the odd numbered years for some reason.
Yeah, like, I don't know why.
And no matter how it sets up, I thought we were going to break that curse this year. When we were 6-2, we were sitting here looking pretty, and I'm like, yeah, I'm ready to see the Saints and blah, blah, blah. And then they lost everything right after I said that.
Yeah, so they lose out?
They didn't lose out. They won one of the games at the end. So it was 7-9.
Forgot.
Yeah.
Just one.
Pretty much, though. I mean, they went 1-7 their last eight games, so they pretty much lost out the rest of the year. I'm all right with Heinicke for now, too. I'm not worried about Cam. Cam is the type where if you put some sort of obstacle in front of him, he tends to overcome it. Like, he's just built that way. He's been that way since we first met him in college.
Mm-hmm.
Never count the dude out. If you start counting the dude out, that's when he starts to shine. It's when people give him too much shine, I think, is when he starts getting full of himself and he doesn't play up to his abilities. And it's actually pretty amazing that when they were 6-2, Cam, in his weekly press conference, he was saying, you know, I'm playing the best football of my career. Like, he said it in the press conference, and then immediately after that, the slide began.
Yeah,
where they lost. And they lost different ways,
too. And I don't know if some of that can be attributed to guys, the other grown men who's playing in the league, who say, oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to see you next week.
Because defenses knew at a certain point around in there that he couldn't throw the ball down the field.
Right.
So defenses started changing how they played Carolina. They basically just let Christian McCaffrey get whatever underneath. But they wouldn't let him have a deep ball. And then it got to the point where they realized he couldn't throw the deep ball. And that's when it really started getting really sticky.
The best thing for the Panthers when it comes to their backup quarterback is to have a good defense. Because if you have to go to your backup quarterback, your defense better be stout. Because you're not going to score a lot of points. I mean, I don't care if you have Kaepernick come in, Heinicke, Kyle Allen. I don't care if you bring out whomever, you know, bring back Derek Anderson. It doesn't matter. I mean, you need a serviceable backup.
Where is Derek Anderson?
I think he wasn't with the Bills. He signed with the Bills.
Did he? That sounds right. They're Panthers North, so that's
my take is that it doesn't matter. I mean, it matters, but it doesn't matter. Like, every team, the best backup in football right now, I think, is Chase Daniels, and he's the backup of the Bears. They won a game with him last year or two because the Bears defense is nice.
And to your point, to go along with the defense, just like in January, you need a great running game.
You got
to
run the ball. Now, offensive line, defensive line, and the quarterback situation takes care of itself.
We'll get into because the NFL Combine's going on right now. We'll get into, you know, Panther picks and things of that sort as we get deeper into the upcoming spring here. Jason Witten, unretiring and rejoining the Dallas Cowboys next season. A, I think that's great for Monday Night Football that Jason Witten's no longer going to be there. Like we were looking up the other day, like best or worst Jason Witten quotes yeah. for Monday Night Football, and what was one of them that I'm looking them up now because they
Didn't
were hilarious.
One of them have something to do with I don't know if it was wine or something. I can't remember what it was. But he was completely off base. And I was like, Jason, you're a cowboy. Just be quiet. Don't say anything.
Him saying, pulling another rabbit out of his head or something like that.
Yeah.
They keep kicking themselves in the foot. I'm glad he's going to be out of that situation.
Every possession is so critical when you're going up against Sam Rogers. Who?
Sam Rogers.
Who's Sam Rogers?
So get him out of there. So, before I even asked the Jason Witten question to Rod.
He was just a little nervous.
Aaron, do we have an update on our poll at all from earlier today? Who should take the place of Jason Witten in Monday Night Football booth? We had Peyton Manning, Booger McFarland, who was already on this telecast, but he was on the field on some weird stage contraption. They had him sitting
on the Boogermobile.
Yeah,
was it on the sideline or something?
Yeah,
like
it was
that?
Like some weird like cart thing that he'd go back and forth on, and he would just
all
do
these people that
there.
Paid a ton of money. It blocked their view, so yeah. ESPN sure put that stupid little screen, little 32-inch TV, and people were like, "What's
going on here?"
Paid $1,200 to be here.
Aaron, we got an update on our poll.
So we got four options. We got Booger McFarland, Peyton Manning, Greg Olsen. And votes for someone else as well if they want to do a write-in vote. 13% for Booger McFarland, 24% for someone else as a write-in vote for Ryan Khalil, 25% for Greg Olsen, and 38% for old forehead Peyton Manning.
Now, how dare you?
Now, I did say on
Man's
Friday,
got a large cranium.
I didn't think it got larger too. It's like that Barry Bonds thing. I'm not even going to go down that.
Allegedly,
but
allegedly.
Now, I've always said Peyton Manning to me. I don't think he would do television, or he would already be doing it. He seems more like a GM/owner type mm-hmm. guy.
You know who I would love, and it would spice things up a little bit. Have you ever listened to Pat McAfee do a game? He's used to be the punter for the Colts.
Uh-uh. No.
Okay. We don't have time for like any YouTube clips or anybody pulling that up. But when you go home, if you're listening to the show or for the guys that are in the studio, look up Pat McAfee. He did a game, and he actually was on when I think a punter like did a fake pass, and he like lost his mind because he's a former punter. He played 15 years in the NFL, and but I'm telling you, he's hysterical. He's really spot on. And I think he would be like an outside shot to do it. But he's broadcasted games before. Oh man, I think it would be great.
Real quick, Rod, Jason Witten, good or bad for the Dallas Cowboy offense? I'm thinking that's great for them
if
he comes back close to form.
It goes either way. I mean, we're going to be a top 5-4 in the NFC anyway. So,
I agree.
I mean, it doesn't matter there. But I think with Jason Witten, you know, it's not just about the catches, the yards, and the touchdowns that he's made. You know, of course, they're all great. But it's more of the example that Witten sets in the locker room, you know, what he does at practice, what he does during the games. You know, it's not about his ability to convert those clutch, you know, third down catches for, you know, what has been going on ever since Tony Romo was there.
Right.
You know, Witten, you know, in 2017, Witten caught 63 passes for just under 600 yards and 5 touchdowns. And his peers put him in the Pro Bowl as a first alternate, which meant in the view of his NFC peers, this guy was the third best tight end in the conference. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So, but my thing is, Jason Witten brings a heck of a work ethic. You know, the coaches had to, in year 2017, just before he retired, the coaches forced him to take time off from training camp. This guy has got commendations from strength and conditioning coaches for the work ethic that he puts in.
So you're not worried about him coming in out of shape or anything?
I'm
like
not
that.
Worried about him coming in out of shape. As a matter of fact, when he comes in, I think he's going to wind up pushing the rest of the guys to work so much harder and get so much better. I mean, this guy is a leader and a coach on and off the field, and I think that's what's going to make it so great. With him coming back, the best part about him coming back, he is going to just, you know, it's just going to be his example. You know, he is going to push everybody. Our team is going to actually mature. You know what I mean? We'll still be young, but we will be mature just from Jason Witten being there. And then let's not even talk about he's only missed one game since his rookie year.
Right, yeah.
You know, I mean, he holds a franchise record for 239 consecutive games and 236 consecutive starts. You know, I mean, this guy is he's Jason Witten.
Okay. Yes. I mean, the Giants have created his Hall of Fame career all by themselves. I mean, with how many touchdowns he scored on them.
Yeah. I think, I mean, looking at the Cowboys from last year, I got to do this real quick and then we got to move on. I thought they needed a tight end. Like, I thought that's what their offense
it
needed.
Was.
You know, they
it
needed
was.
Somebody that can run those underneath routes. Jason Witten's going to get those chains moving. Now you've got that, plus you got Amari Cooper to stretch the field. You got Zeke coming out the backfield. You still have remnants of one of the best lines in football, and you've got a really young defense. Yeah. So, the Cowboys got a lot to look
point,
forward to.
Even at tight end, we had Schultz, Jarwin, and Swain at tight end. Of course, Swain's set to be a free agent this year. But these guys combined for 66 catches and just over 700 yards and 4 touchdowns themselves. I just told you Jason Witten in 2017 had 63 catches, which is 3 shy of those 3 combined. Almost 600 yards, which is 100 yards shy of them combined, and 5 touchdowns, which is 1 more touchdown than they had.
Do you know that
combined.
Swain had 3 touchdowns against the Giants in the last week of the season of those 4?
Let me get
I believe it. Yeah.
Let me get Sawyer here real quick.
Me and Aaron were just, you know, over here on Twitter breaking that Gurley has arthritis in his knee, that which could explain why he
wasn't Todd Gurley?
Yeah.
He has arthritis in his knee.
Was he 106?
Yeah. He's like 24. Yeah.
Pro Football Talk reports just tweeted Rams running back Todd Gurley reportedly has arthritis in his knee.
Guys, if you remember, I told you he was hurt.
Yeah, you did.
You remember? I said he is hurt.
We also said that if the Rams knew he was hurt and didn't put him on the injury report,
that's exactly
really
what
bad
you
for
said.
The Rams. So we'll follow that too over the course of the next couple of weeks and see what happens. Real quick before I got to take this break, guys, just real quick answers. Robert Kraft pled guilty to solicitation of prostitution in Florida this week. Will Kraft have to give up ownership of the Patriots, or will he ultimately just get a fine and a suspension a la Jim Irsay from the Colts, which happened a couple years back?
Yeah, the New England Patriots, number one. Is your question, is he going to have to give up ownership?
Yeah.
No, he's not going to have to give up ownership. I mean, he was charged with misdemeanor solicitation of a prostitution. So it's not even a felony.
Irsay had
Irsay
not subscribed to him and something else.
Irsay was driving impaired, which is a felony.
Right. You know, you're right. You're right.
I mean, so you're saying you're going to sell a team for a misdemeanor and the guy who got a felony is not going to have to sell a team?
I've heard people saying that he's going to have to turn over the team to his son and all this other stuff.
The only caveat to that in kind of like the law terms is, if he somehow to be found out that he knew that there was human trafficking involved, then that turns into a misdemeanor to a felony. And right now he's being charged in misdemeanor, but there's an ongoing investigation, right? But my question is, I mean, he's a billionaire. What the hell is he doing there?
Well, you got to understand.
Question. That's what we haven't seen yet. There's something else missing in this story.
It doesn't make sense to me. The allegations don't add up.
I mean, Robert Kraft, to me, the place he got caught at, possibly they were under investigation, had some troubles elsewhere, and then they said maybe they'll bring you a big fish. But, you know, Robert Kraft's wife had just passed away from cancer. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, maybe the guy was just going to relax and was at the wrong place at the wrong time. You know what I mean?
Well, he's been more than once. I'm trying to figure out how he's going to plead.
Maybe they give great massages. I don't know.
I'm trying to figure out how he's pleading not guilty when they got the dude on tape the middle of doing these acts. But then again, hey, R. Kelly got off the first time and he was on tape,
so anything can happen, I guess. You plead not guilty to keep your options open. You know what I'm saying? If he's expected to go to trial, you know, what he's saying is we can work out an arrangement whenever you plead not guilty. Because normally, whenever you plead not guilty, it allows you to participate in what first-time offenders are often able to get, which is to be enrolled in a diversion program.
We got to take a quick break,
okay,
our last
no
break
problem.
Of the show. Coming up, odds and ends, rapid fire round. We get 1 minute to debate a random topic. You do not want to miss this. Next on The Rundown.
What's up, dog?
Think about it.
A party?
Are we having a party?
Yeah!
Yeah! Back to The Rundown with Desmond Johnson.
Odds and ends, you've been listening to The Rundown. Desmond Johnson, Rod Funderburk, Mark Zanetto sitting in for our man Johnny O. Didn't get a chance to get Johnny O today. He was going to try to call in from his tailgating location out at the Joel. Hopefully him and his posse are okay, and hopefully they've been listening to The Rundown this morning. Shout out to Sawyer Dillon with his music selection this morning. He's been killing it.
Yes, he has.
Intern
yes,
Aaron killing the social media for us right now. You still got a couple more minutes to get in with some opinion, but right now we're going to get into odds and ends. Sawyer set a stop clock for 1 minute. At the end of 1 minute, we will hear a buzzer sound. That buzzer sound will let you know that we are out of time for that topic. 5 topics, rapid fire. Let's go ahead and get it going. Sawyer.
Rapid
All right, first up, will Virginia lose a game for the rest of the ACC regular season?
I don't know what their schedule is. I probably should have.
Well, I'm going to tell you what. I've already said it. Virginia loses on Tuesday to Syracuse at Syracuse on Tuesday, which propels North Carolina as the ACC regular season champions, baby.
Wouldn't that be nice? I'm looking at their schedule. They've got Pittsburgh today, Syracuse Monday.
Hell no.
They are losing.
And then Louisville Saturday. So they got Syracuse and Louisville, their last two games.
They ain't losing. I'm going against Rodney.
I want to say yes because of what Rodney laid out
Syracuse,
there.
Syracuse, man.
Would be perfect.
It's in Syracuse.
Because then that would make Duke Carolina next weekend.
That don't matter.
If Carolina wins, they win the ACC title or regular season title. So I'm going to say yes. I'm going to say Virginia's going to drop a game. I don't know which one between Syracuse and Louisville. I would bet probably Syracuse, but yeah. Nope. I'm going to say they're going to drop one.
Yeah, Mark, you're the one that told us they get that extra, 30% chance of winning when you're at home?
Yeah, Virginia's number two in the country, though.
Sorry. All right. Next up, better chance to make the Final Four, UNC as a 2-seed or a Zionless Duke 1-seed?
Well, first off, if Zion doesn't come back, Duke's not getting a 1-seed because they're going to keep dropping, so they're going to go to a 2. But under this circumstance, I'm going UNC as a 2-seed.
Rod. You have to go UNC as a 2-seed. I mean, with the Zionless Duke, they don't even make it to the Sweet 16.
Boom. Okay.
Wow. See, Rod coming in with them hot takes. I agree. Because even UNC as a 2-seed more than likely will get potted in North Carolina. No, they don't have any games in North Carolina in NCAA this year. I don't think they're in Charlotte.
No,
this year.
South Carolina's got some. Columbia's got some.
Yeah, so they'll get potted close to North Carolina, but I would like to think UNC as a 2-seed would be better than I've just seen a Zionless Duke team, and I'm not scared of them. I'm not scared of them at all. In fact, I want to play them again. I want to see Carolina play them with Zion just for a measuring stick for ourselves.
I believe he'll be back Saturday.
I think he'll be back then. They're probably saving him for that because at this point, I imagine Kay's probably conceded the ACC regular season knowing that Virginia's probably not going to drop a game.
That's right.
Look at that, right in the time.
All right, next up, should Panthers tight end Greg Olsen retire and begin broadcasting career after injuring his foot twice in the past 2 years?
As the non-Panthers fan, I say yes because, you know what, man, he's given his all to this franchise. You know, great guy in the community, does a lot of things for young kids with heart problems. He's already a good broadcaster. You know, he definitely has the tools for it. Just go for it, man. Start your next career.
Rod.
It's hard to give up football when you love playing it. I say he plays one more year for the Panthers. If he has a foot injury this year, that's the 3 strikes and you're out. Then go broadcast. In the meantime, don't do a Jason Witten, leave and then come back. Just stay, baby, until it's your time to head out.
Greg Olsen is the only tight end in history to have 3 back-to-back-to-back 1,000-yard receiving seasons. And then he's had foot injuries the past 2 years where he's only played like 4 games or something the past like 2 years. If Monday Night Football, if ESPN comes around with some Disney money and they're like, look, we'll pay you $5 million or whatever, because I think he said the only way he considered going into the booth this year would be if they pay him close to what he's making salary-wise for the Panthers. They're going to pay him $5 million. John Gruden was getting $5 million in the booth. Greg Olsen's shown that he can do it well broadcast-wise. I'm not sure. He might not be back. I don't know. Sawyer.
All right. Currently, the Knicks and the Suns are battling for the first pick of the NBA draft. Who would be a better fit for Zion Williamson in terms of current rosters?
What you got?
The Knicks. I need to go look at the Knicks roster because
I'm going to go Knicks, and the reason why is you got Dennis Smith Jr. You put him in Zion pick and roll. Throw Mitchell Robinson down low as a defensive stopper.
If you go
Zion and Mitchell Robinson as the power forward in the center, now you got two of maybe the most dynamic shot blockers in all of basketball. Mitchell Robinson's leading the NBA in shot blocking this year. I'm going Knicks.
I'm with you, Mark. Definitely go Knicks. Not only is it Robinson and Williamson, but then the Knicks have some money to pick up a free agent, don't they? A big name free agent.
You got money for 2.
Yes, sir. So you got money there. Spend the money, baby. It's that time of the year. Just like the lottery, $347 million right now.
That's right.
Powerball, listen, North Carolina.
Listen to this. I'm going to go the other way. I think he would be a better fit on the Phoenix Suns roster. I almost wish the Phoenix Suns roster was in the Eastern Conference, but just looking at what's
on
that
team.
They do. They're kind of similar to Sacramento. They've got TJ Warren. Hold on. TJ Warren, Devin Booker, Kelly Oubre Jr., Tyler Johnson, Troy Daniels, Josh Jackson from Kansas from a couple years ago. DeAndre Ayton was the number one pick last year. Mikael Bridges from Villanova.
I just heard, wah, wah.
Jamal Crawford still on this team. I don't know. I think that they
Knicks,
they
baby. It's the there. Knicks.
And then finally, one more.
All right, Kyler Murray or Dwayne Haskins, which QB has the best shot to be drafted number one overall, or is there another QB with a better shot?
Kyler Murray is going to be the number one pick overall. You're hearing it here first, and I'm not going to. This is 100% prediction. Forget about Dwayne Haskins. I think Dwayne Haskins is a bigger guy. But as far as arm strength, dynamic ability in the pocket, outside of the pocket, I think you go Kyler Murray. Something about baseball guys. We saw it with Pat Mahomes. The ability to kind of use arm angle and have these, you know, quick releases. Forget about he's 5'10". He's just as tall as Russell Wilson. It's Kyler Murray.
I think you make a mistake taking Kyler Murray first overall. I'm sorry. Yeah, he may be tall enough, but he's just not big enough. He loves to run. He's going to take a hit. These guys, linebackers and ends, are just as fast as he is, and they will lay the wood on you. Real quickly, in college, when it comes to pass completions, Dwayne Haskins had 348. Kyler Murray had 241. Mm. When it comes to passing yards, Kyler Murray had just over 4,000. Dwayne Haskins had over 4,500. I can go on and on and on in that perspective. But this is what it boils down to. Dwayne Haskins came out of a high-passing offense. He passed 54% of the time in that offense. Kyler Murray did not. He has more experience in passing. Experience takes you where you need to go, Dwayne Haskins, baby.
I said on the drive earlier this week that Kyler Murray is going to be the number one overall pick. I don't think it's going to be to the Arizona Cardinals. I think they're going to trade it out, but I think he's going to go number one. Catch us on iTunes, SoundCloud, video clips available from netcastsports.com on YouTube, or full shows via subscription. Download the free WSGS Sports Hub app from Google Play or iTunes. Check us out on Spotify and all kinds of podcast centers. And check out 4 Minutes with Desmond Johnson every Thursday on YouTube. A quick recap of sports news in the Carolinas. We're out. We'll see you next week.